These are the stories that you need to know about today. The absolute weirdness, really, truly weird. This militant terror cell in India with ties to Pakistan and Kashmir, and what they were planning to do next. The highest-ranking Israeli minister after Netanyahu says, kill them all, kill them all. If the UN pushes for Palestinian statehood, he wants Palestinian Authority leaders assassinated. And he's saying this out loud.
It is insulting. I call you to order and ask you to use the language that is appropriate and appropriate for this chamber. Otherwise, I will cut you off.
She will cut him off. Sorry, you cannot offend Ursula von der Leyen. That actually happened. As the EU leader has now decided to double down on sending even more money to Ukraine, despite the corruption bust that so many people are complaining about. You gotta hear this. You gotta hear this for yourself. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do it. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Yesterday, we told you how many European leaders were backing away from Zelensky. Well, because of $100 million corruption scandal, right? Well, I told you about Slovakia. They said no. I told you about Germany asking for an investigation. I told you about Poland. That was surprising. Expressing disdain for the graft they see in Kiev. Poland. But today, we're hearing for the first time from EU President Ursula von der Leyen. And her reaction seems to be corruption. Corruption scandal? What corruption scandal? Where? Seriously. She actually wants to immediately send more money to her, quote, dearest friend Vladimir. This is the headline that's coming out of Brussels. Happened yesterday when von der Leyen came out and started speaking again about this. People were waiting to see what she had to say. Ukraine is in urgent need of funds. That's right. She's right. They are. Because of corruption, many would argue, because of the apparent mismanagement of funds, and because of some of the questionable war strategies they've used, Ukraine is said to be $152 billion in the red again. That's what they owe. Von der Leyen wants Europeans to pay up. By the way, I found this, and I thought you'd like to see it, so I'm going to share it with you. Look what happens when someone stands up to criticize von der Leyen. This is a remarkable exchange that just took place there at the EU.
So, you've heard Madam Reichsführerin von der Leyen. She thinks she's some kind of rain whisperer, some sorcerer. She's dangerous. She should be put in some madhouse instead of... This is my political diagnosis. This is my political recommendation.
It is insulting. I call you to order and ask you to use the language that is appropriate and appropriate for this chamber. Otherwise, I will cut you off.
Could you please, Madam Chair, advise me which particular word that I used is an inappropriate.
You called President von der Leyen a Nazi, and that's unacceptable. It's not possible. So if she...
I referred to her position here. I call her Reichsführerin von der Leyen because this is the way she executes the superpower that you gave her.
Okay, I'm done. I'm taking the floor away.
I'm done with you. I'm taking the floor back. I'm not going to let you speak. You're not allowed to insult Ursula von der Leyen. It's an amazing exchange, isn't it? By the way, I'm not agreeing with his choice of words and his offensive nature and what he called her, but guess what? It's called free speech. You're allowed to insult people. See, this in and of itself is incredible. The speaker criticized von der Leyen for, among other things, her wasting taxpayer money on Ukraine, he said. So what is von der Leyen actually doing instead? She just sent out a letter to all the EU capitals asking them to urgently send more money to Ukraine. I told you before, $152 billion, on top of the estimated $300 and $400 billion that they've already received. One European leader answered immediately with a response that seems to akin to, like, saying, what are you, nuts? Yep. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban blasted von der Leyen again. He blasted the EU request, and he blasted the Zelensky government as well, all at the same time. He called the Ukrainian government Kiev's war mafia, his word. And then he said that it was siphoning off the funds from European taxpayers. But Orban, Viktor Orban, saved his best for last, comparing giving more money to Ukraine being the same thing as giving vodka to a drunk.
I received a letter today from President von der Leyen. She writes that Ukraine's financing gap is significant and asks member states to send more money. It's astonishing. At a time when it's become clear that a war mafia is siphoning off European taxpayers' money, instead of demanding real oversight or suspending payments, the Commission president suggests we send even more. This whole matter is a bit like trying to help an alcoholic by sending them another crate of vodka. Hungary has not lost its common sense.
Sorry, not just vodka, a crate of vodka. Von der Leyen is offering Europeans three ways to be able to pay Zelensky's bills. They can simply write a check to Ukraine. She refers to this as a voluntary bilateral contribution. Sounds fancier than more official, I guess, right? Kind of like putting lipstick on a pig. They could also, she says, get together a group of countries and then borrow the money from the EU. Then they could give it to Zelensky and Zelensky would eventually pay them back. And then later she offered a third option. And this one gets a little bit hinky, legally questionable, and maybe even downright dangerous, right? Yeah. This one is this headline, interestingly enough. It's about the EU having the ability to freeze Russia's assets that are worth more than $220 billion. Their plan is to have European countries agree to use that money by taking the interest off of that money and then giving it to Ukraine so Ukraine can then use Russia's weapons to attack Russia. Pardon me, Russia's money to attack Russia. How's that sound to you? Sounds a little outlandish, no? Using Russia's money to then give to Ukraine so they can buy weapons to attack Russia. I mean, here's why I think it's a bit crazy. First and foremost, according to international laws, those frozen assets are legally still Russia's state property. That means the outright seizure of all or any part of it raises some serious issues.
This von der Leyen and her ilk make decisions that will lead to nothing good for European countries. Those who encroach on our property are thieves and frauds. There is no other way to interpret these actions. Why do they hide behind the facade of the European Union? Because many national parliaments and states do not want to participate in this theft. Because tomorrow they will have to return everything with interest. We must do everything we can to protect our country, our property, and the finances that, according to international laws, are protected in other countries.
He's right about international law. If Russia sues and wins, right, for them doing this to them, or taking, stealing their money, is what Russia says, Belgium, which is where the EU is located, they could face some huge liabilities, according to a court. Number two, turning a bank into a weapon is never a good idea. See, the damage that's going to be done to what's left of EU's credibility, that would be felt for years. Even the European Central Bank is warning EU not to do this. And here's what they're trying to say. If the EU does this, right, if they literally confiscate Russia's assets and use it to give it to Ukraine, then other global investors won't trust them in the future. Let me just ask you this. Would you? Would you trust a bank that confiscates your assets, your money, because they disagree with you politically? Number three, political and strategic risk. The money is tied to the outcome of the war in Ukraine, right? So if Ukraine doesn't succeed, the EU would have even more liabilities. And number four, this thing could drive EU member countries even further out of the mainstream. Many of them are already saying, absolutely not. We're not going to go along with this plan. Hungary said that, Slovakia said that, and some others are being hesitant, like Germany and Belgium, surprisingly. If pushed through, this controversy could lead to more division, maybe even a partial breakup of the EU. Let's go to India. I got to tell you, I've been reading about this thing that happened there, this car bombing. This is the strangest suspected terror cell that I've ever heard of. Police say the car bombing near Delhi's Red Fort metro station was not the work of, like, street-level militants, but of a white-collar terror cell made up of doctors and academics and professionals who quietly built up this network right under the country's nose. And at the center of all this was some guy named Dr. Ubar Nabi. There he is right there. He's dead now. He's a physician. He killed himself in the car bombing with the fill of explosives. Authorities now say that he helped motivate groups of recruits, all hyper-educated, by the way, who were part of his militant group, Jaish-e-Mohammed. They also say that the car bombing was rushed, that it was done at the last minute as they learned that police were starting to raid their homes and their work sites. Now, interestingly enough, supporters of the militant group Jaish-e-Mohammed are mostly from Pakistan and Kashmir. And get this. We're now learning that their funding was a sophisticated scheme to pull off a series of drone attacks. That's what they were eventually planning to do. Bottom line, this wasn't a ragtag cell. This was a professional class gone rogue, I guess, embedded among India's most educated elites. Now to Israel. You're not going to believe this one, where there seems to be no limit to the country's defiance of international law. Talk about chutzpah. The country's defense minister is now publicly calling for the assassination of Palestinian politicians. Here's Netanyahu's ally, I guess they call him the security minister, Ben-Gvir.
I call on our dear Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today. You should announce that Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has no immunity. If they accelerate the recognition of this made-up state, if the UN recognizes this thing, you, Mr. Prime Minister, must order targeted assassinations of senior Palestinian Authority officials who are terrorists for all intents and purposes. And you, Mr. Prime Minister, should order the arrest of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. There is a cell ready for him in Ketziot prison.
Wow, did you hear that? That's crazy. Funny how there's no condemnation from the EU. Where's von der Leyen? Where's Ursula when you need her, right? I mean, aren't you gonna say something about that? That's Israel's security minister saying that if the United States, the United Nations gives Palestinians statehood, then the leader of the Palestinian Authority should be placed in solitary confinement, I guess like a dungeon. Oh, and as for the rest of his senior Palestinian officials who were part of the Palestinian Authority, well, according to him, they need to be assassinated. Yes, assassinated. That's what he said. Did I mention there was no comment from the EU and Ursula von der Leyen? After the break, we're going to be talking to someone who knows a lot about this story. He was actually once shot by the IDF. He's the leader of the Palestinian National Initiative. He's going to join us a little bit just here to discuss this topic, this heated topic that the whole world is paying attention to. Don't go away. We're going to be right back. Hey, welcome back to the Sanchez Effect. Let me tell you what's going on. So I told you moments ago that we were going to be doing an interview with Mustafa Barghouti. Now, Mustafa Barghouti, he's the leader of the Palestinian National Initiative. But more importantly, he's probably one of the most renowned, one of the most respected voices when it comes to the Palestinian cause. He appears on shows all over the world and had agreed that he would be joining us today to talk about this story that I just told you about regarding Ben-Gvir. Amidst all of that, we were getting ready to connect with him when we had lost the shot, that we weren't able to connect with him. We weren't exactly sure why. We are getting an understanding at this point that he may have been detained somehow. We saw him just moments ago. I looked up at the monitors and I saw pictures of him that where he was in his car, and I wasn't able to. I wasn't quite sure whether he was able to make it on air or not. I saw his image. It was freezing and it was breaking up. But we figured if nothing else, we're going to be able to talk to him and do what we used to call in the old days a phoner, right? Or a beeper, where you get to talk to somebody even if you don't see them. It doesn't matter. There's very few people who would be better to speak to on this issue today about Ben-Gvir saying that if the United Nations goes through with its plan to try and create a Palestinian state, that he is suggesting to his prime minister and dear friend Bibi Netanyahu that Palestinian Authority politicians should be assassinated. Assassinated. And the leader of the Palestinian Authority, he said, should be put essentially in confinement, solitary confinement. Obviously, this in and of itself is absolutely crazy for someone to say something like that. And we're not talking about something that was recorded. You may have heard it when he said it himself. So what makes Mustafa Barghouti such a perfect guest on this topic is that back in the 1990s, he's a doctor. He's been a doctor for many years and has started many medical offices there helping Palestinians for decades now. He was part of the Camp David Accord. He has been a part of this for many, many years. He was... And I'm being told now, are you saying we got him? Do we have him? Oh, there you go. Joining us now is Mustafa Barghouti. And I was trying to explain to our audience that we were so excited to talk to you because you're the perfect person to talk to about this guest, when all of a sudden we were told we had lost you. Mr. Barghouti, could you explain to us why you were delayed? What happened? Were you detained? What's going on?
Well, because I'm driving from Tul Karim in the north of the West Bank, trying to get back to Ramallah, and there are so many Israeli checkpoints on the road. And it's not just the checkpoints. There is about 1,000 military checkpoints in the West Bank, which is a very small area anyhow. And they transform the ability to travel into hell, really. But more important, the whole city of Ramallah, which is like considered almost a capital of the West Bank, we have only one passage in or out, one small road. All the other roads are blocked by the Israeli army. And so that's why we live almost in a prison-like situation. We and most of the Palestinian communities in the West Bank.
Sounds to me like you're an occupied human being, like you're living in an occupied area. Some would even say it's a bit of a concentration camp. Sure, they say, well, this is kind of Palestinian territory within Israel, but if Israelis and their authorities can tell you where you can go, when you can go, and they stop you so many times, as you have just experienced for yourself, then I don't think you're very free.
No, of course, we are under military occupation since 1967 in the West Bank and Gaza. And Israel itself was created on the Palestinian land, not in the sky. So it's all Palestinian land, but West Bank and Gaza were occupied in 1967. And since then, we've been living under the longest military occupation in modern history. And more than that, the system we are subjected to is a system of apartheid, a discrimination. There is one law, civil law for Israelis, and military law for Palestinians. And just recently, they are trying to pass a law of execution against Palestinians only. So if a Palestinian kills an Israeli, he will be executed. But if an Israeli kills a Palestinian, he will not be executed. That's the kind of laws they are passing. And it's a system of racial discrimination across the board. We get, for instance, no more than 150 cubic meters of water per year per capita. Israeli illegal settlers who are settling in the occupied territories illegally can get 1,450, 20 times more than Palestinians. It's about discrimination in water supplies, discrimination in income, discrimination in job opportunities. And also, we are the only place in the world where you have highways, high roads, very big highways that are exclusive for Israelis. If we try to drive or walk on them, we can be put in jail for 6 months.
You know personally what it's like to be a Palestinian targeted by the IDF. As a matter of fact, despite the fact that, as I've said, you are one of you're a man of dignity. You're a man who's met with U.S. presidents. You appear on national broadcasts all over the world. You're a doctor. You've started medical foundations. And yet you're treated like a lowly citizen yourself. And in back in the 1990s, as I understand, and maybe you could share this with our viewers, you were actually targeted by soldiers, Israeli soldiers, while you were trying to save the life of somebody who had already been attacked by Israelis, correct?
That's true. That was in 1996 at the entrance of the city where I live now, Ramallah. And there were demonstrations, and they shot somebody, and he was bleeding on the fifth floor in a building, and they called on me. I was in my white coat as a medical doctor. And while I was trying to stop the bleeding, an Israeli sniper saw me and shot me twice with live ammunition. I was lucky, but I still carry in my shoulder and back 36 shrapnels from that attack. But besides that, even when I participate, I'm a person who believes in nonviolence and who tried to promote nonviolence in Palestine. And during the demonstrations that I participated in, demanding our rights and freedom, I was injured up to now 9 times. Although these were very peaceful demonstrations and there was no violence from our side. So that's the situation we live in. One more important information for your audience to know. I was born in Jerusalem myself, and I worked as a medical doctor in a major hospital in Jerusalem for 15 years. And since 2005, I am forbidden from reaching Jerusalem, which is part of the West Bank. I cannot even visit my daughter, my sister who lives there.
You know, I have read report after report after report and seen interviews and talked to a few people in the healthcare business, nurses, who have told me very similar things to what you just described, where doctors and nurses and other personnel, including patients in some cases, were actually targeted by the IDF. Like, it wasn't a mistake. They weren't like... it wasn't a bomb, an errant bomb that went off or a gunshot that accidentally went off. No, they were targeted by the IDF. True, correct?
During the genocidal war on Gaza, which lasted the last 2 years, the Israeli planes and tanks bombarded 94% of the hospitals while patients were there in.
Why?
They destroyed... They have so many reasons, they claim, but it's not true. It's about destruction of the infrastructure, the health infrastructure, the educational infrastructure. All universities were erased to the ground. So many schools were destroyed. Our health centers of the foundation that I run in Gaza, which provides health care to 200,000 people every month, we were targeted to, and nine of our clinics were destroyed by Israeli bombardment. But more than that, no less than 1,750 health workers, including doctors, nurses, other health professionals, have been killed by the Israeli bombardment.
Wow.
And no less than 300 are detained in Israeli jails, including 16 medical doctors, some of whom did nothing wrong, and they except treating the Palestinian people and the injured people in Gaza. So you can see the level of attacks on the humanitarian facilities. And I don't know if your audience know, but in the last 2 years, we lost no less than 70,000 Palestinians. 80% of whom were pure civilians, including 20,000 children who were all killed by Israeli bombardment.
Yeah, yeah. These are just facts that you're sharing with us. I have to ask you about the big story today. Ben-Gavir just came out, and I am so shocked to hear him saying this out loud. This is usually something you'd think he accidentally said and somebody recorded it and it's being reported. But he said it out loud, almost as if he were boasting the fact that, according to him, if the United Nations continues with its plan to try and create a Palestinian state, he's suggesting to Bibi Netanyahu that the Palestinian Authority leader be put in prison and that the rest of his members of the Palestinian Authority should be assassinated. And he used that word. What's your reaction to that?
That is another proof of the kind of Israeli leaders we are dealing with. These are pure fascists. They are fascists, nothing less, nothing. And there is no way of describing Ben-Gvir or Smotrich except as fascist leaders, led and allowed to function by another fascist leader, which is Netanyahu. Mm. And the fact that these fascists are calling for the total ethnic cleansing of the people of Gaza. They are also calling for the ethnic cleansing of the West Bank. They are, this man, Ben-Gvir, came out and said yesterday that there is no Palestinian people. He denies our existence.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only imagine what that feels like for you. I mean, as a man.
That is the nature. That is the nature of this person. So I'm not surprised he's saying that, because this is the nature of this kind of fascist people who try to practice, unfortunately, Jewish supremacy over Palestinians. Mm. Although we know how much Jewish people suffered during the Second World War, mm-hmm. and how much they suffered from the Nazi fascist system. But unfortunately, they are repeating the same behavior now against Palestinian people.
Wow. Mustafa Barghouti, I'm glad we had a chance to get you on. Thank you, doctor. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your wisdom. I feel bad for your experience. I can only imagine what it must feel like to live under those conditions and to go through it day in and day out. I complain. Most of us wherever we live in the world complain when there's a lot of traffic in our cities, and certainly in Moscow, there's plenty of that. But the idea that you would be told by the government where you can go, when you can go, and they detain you every couple of blocks must be tough. Must be a very difficult situation. Thank you again, sir.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for hosting me. But let me tell you one last sentence.
Of course.
Whatever they do, they will not break us. We are determined to stay in our country and determined to get our freedom eventually.
Wow. You're a strong man.
Thank you.
Thank you again. You've been listening to the words of Mustafa Barghouti. He's Barghouti. It's fascinating. As you probably heard, we were trying to get him on, and then it's a life experience. It's even perhaps more important, more impactful than to do just the interview, which we were able to do, because it shows you how even a guy like this, what he has to go through, what his daily existence is like, living in a place like the West Bank and Ramallah, where it's totally controlled. You know, he says he feels like he's imprisoned every day of his life. A doctor, a man in his late 70s, a man who sat with U.S. presidents and world leaders. This is his life. Wow. So many of you watch our shows, and then you react to what we say, and we certainly appreciate it. So many of you have liked or commented on the program and the interview we just did with Dennis Kucinich, for example. Another man of integrity, I believe. I want to share some of the comments. Sergey says, "Hello, Mr. Sanchez. I live in Minnesota, and I didn't know that you went to school here." Yes, I did, sir. Minnesota, Minnesota. Yes, sir. Always enjoying your shows, he says. Keep up the good work. It looks like when politicians are no longer in service, some of them actually have been telling the truth. Well, you know, in the case of Dennis Kucinich, I'll tell you, he's been a truth teller for a long time. I used to interview him in the old days when I worked at CNN, and he was honest back then as well. Victims Deserve Justice says, "Is Rick Sanchez familiar about AZAPAC? And if so, what's his opinion? Please let us know." Thank you. Well, okay, thank you for asking. Look, I've been looking into AZAPAC for a while. I think they're a legitimate organization. I think it's important in the United States to have a yin and a yang. And obviously, we know what the yin is. The yin is AIPAC. The yin is where basically people who are Zionists tell the president of the United States, the Senate, and Congress what to do. And if you're a journalist and you criticize them, you get fired. They happen to me. So I understand that. It's nice with AZAPAC that there's an organization now being formed to essentially be a buttress against that, to have a different point of view, to say maybe it's time that the United States controls its own destiny and really is America first as opposed to Israel first. I get it. I think it's a worthwhile organization. But Not Buddy says, 35 years of age in the heart of the empire, Pittsburgh, PA. Yay, Pittsburgh, PA. Go Steelers. I don't think in all my years I've experienced a single basic freedom. Man, that's a hell of a thing to say. Thank you for that, Pittsburgh, PA. Rodnor says, corrupt to the bones. It's a clown's world and a government filled with clowns. USA should take care of the people in the USA, but they're too busy doing the best evil, doing the best for an evil country in the Middle East. I wonder which one you're talking about. Listen, we do love your thoughts, and we appreciate everything that you have to say. And thank you for being there with us. If you want to give a comment, if you want to comment on Mr. Barghouti's comments and my interview with him, go to my YouTube channel. It's called Journalistically Speaking with Rick Sanchez. I'll look for you there, and I'll read what you say. Or you can go to my Twitter or X page as well. And that's at Sanchez TV, Rick Sanchez TV. I'll be looking for you there as well. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for hanging in there with us during this problem we had, this technical problem trying to get it back on the air. We'll be looking for you again, and thank you for letting us into your home.